welcome to Radio Free Nintendo. This is episode 241. I'm your host, Jonathan Metz, and with me as always, James Jones.
Hi.
John Lindemann.
Hey, hey, hey.
And Greg is not here tonight. He's watching the NFL draft, so instead we brought in our old friend, Billy Berghammer.
Hey, how's it going?
So glad to have Billy on here. Billy's famous.
I'm not famous, and the draft doesn't start for a half hour, so...
Well, we're actually starting much earlier today. We're about an hour earlier than normal, because Billy has to go quickly. He's only going to be on the beginning here, because Jeff Cannata apparently is stealing him away to go see Prince.
Again.
And Billy, I want you to tell Jeff that I'm very unhappy with him about this.
I will. I'll tell Prince, too.
In order to make it up to me, Jeff is going to have to come on this show with Prince.
With Prince.
Yeah.
That would be some mind-blowing shit, I could tell you that.
Actually, I want to have Prince co-host Discover Music Project with me and talk about Prince.
That would be cool.
Yeah, it would. Hey, Billy, so good to have you here, man. Since you've been on Weekend Confirmed a couple times recently, which is, very glad that you're back on the show. It was the most Nintendo talk I'd ever heard, and it was even before all the rumors hit. And I think I even sent you a text after I was listening to that, and I was like, this is the best episode of Weekend Confirmed I've ever heard.
You know, it's funny, too, because the show was definitely not planned out like that. Like, just on the show notes, initially, we were just going to, you know... My what you've been playing was 3DS, and then I just kind of steamrolled into me puking a lot about Nintendo, and it'd been a while since I was on the show, so it was really fun, and I was talking about the fact that most likely my gut feeling was that we were going to see a new system at E3 or find out some more details about it, and sure enough, as we were recording, that was when the rumor broke, so... Not that I was any premonition, but to be honest, like, and Johnny, I know you've been talking about it too. I mean, you guys talked about the next system on your panel, so.
Yeah, I just want to say we were first. We got there before, we were talking about it in depth before anybody else.
Just the way the release schedule was looking and the fact that, you know, it's not like they're phasing out the Wii, but it doesn't seem like Nintendo's really put anything really in it, even up to the holidays. So when you look at it, it's like, what are their teams doing? And
right.
Even 3DS, you know, with the titles that have already been out or even the Nintendo published titles that are going to be coming out in the next, you know, 3 to 6 months, you know, they're not being developed internally, really. They're farming that stuff out.
I mean, yeah, I think the deal with 3DS is that Nintendo's internal titles they're the kind of projects that take longer to do, so they weren't ready for launch, and they kind of knew that. I mean, stuff like Paper Mario, which I assume is being done by Intelligent Systems, you know, that's an RPG, basically. It's going to take a while to do. And so they lined up these other studios to help them crank out a few things early on, you know, and a lot of third-party support, too. So
it's smart.
I think E3 is going to be really good for 3DS. And in terms of the new console, it's pretty exciting because we found out this week, we're getting into normal new business soon, but since we got Billy here, we should talk about this stuff first, maybe. But Nintendo just officially announced that the console will be at E3. It will be playable. Right now, they're just calling it the successor to the Wii. So we'll see.
Rolls right off the tongue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. Well, one of the new rumors is that it's going to be called the Nintendo Stream, which I guess is related to the rumor that it would be like streaming some kind of interactive content to the screens on the controllers. I just think, like, your last console title was the butt of a lot of penis jokes, and then this one's going to be urination jokes. So it sounds better than Wii, but it's still, like, it's so easy, you know? And
yes, the Wii Stream.
Stream, even though it's one syllable, it doesn't roll off the tongue all that well, actually. It's not the easiest thing to say to pronounce, especially for Japanese people.
Stream
so.
It. Yeah.
Oh, I could just see the commercials in Japan. Streamo!
Nintendo Stream It.
But they can also just grab that by the horns like Sony did. I mean, Sony PS3 commercials still include the phrase PlayStation at the end every time. And they've been using that for 10 years, you know, more than like 15 years.
Yeah,
it's gotten a lot of mileage out of that.
It's branding. So, I mean, yeah. I don't believe that sounds terrible for
a
name, but
so bad.
Yeah.
It sounds too normal, honestly.
Well,
how is Stream normal?
It's awful, but at the same time, it's very generic. I don't think it'll be that.
Yeah,
that's right. We only want our awfulness in ways we can't comprehend.
Exactly.
I, I think the other problem with it is that it's really early in the game for Nintendo to be finalizing a name for their product. Mm-hmm. Like, Kinect was Project Natal for like 2 years before.
Have we even confirmed? Has it been confirmed that this is Project Cafe? That that's the actual code name?
Well, kind of.
Nintendo hasn't announced it,
yeah.
Because they suck at naming their images on their websites, yes.
Yeah. On the development website, Wario World.
Yeah, that's right.
They have a couple of Project Cafe, which we found, actually. We weren't the only people to find it, but we found it independently.
Let's not codename our images. Let's put Cafe in them.
Yeah, that was Aaron Kaluska's work. Very fine work, actually. And, yeah, so it's at least internally being called Project Cafe, but that doesn't necessarily mean that's what they're going to call it at E3. Mm-hmm. And even what they do call it at E3 is not necessarily the final name either.
No.
So, Billy, last time you were on Weekend Confirmed, you never actually got to talk about the games you were playing, and I kept waiting, like, wait, when is it Billy's turn?
Well, I actually did. I mean, I was talking about Portal, because that's basically what I had just finished up.
A little bit, yeah.
Just the single player. So, I mean, I know Skip talked about a lot more. I finished the single player Portal 2. I basically couldn't stop. It's one, at least for me, it was a game that I could not stop playing, but I think that's, for me, that's how Valve games usually go. I just don't want to put them down.
I had to take breaks from it every couple hours because my brain was just too, it wasn't that I felt overwhelmed or exhausted. I felt like my brain was full and I needed to take a minute to digest what I had just done.
Yeah, my first couple hours with it, because I was up Monday night just waiting for it to, you know, to unlock on Steam, and, you know, I played it for a couple hours and went to sleep, and sure enough, you know, I had dreams about Portal and Portal guns and all that sort of crap, and, you know, that was quite entertaining, but, man, that game is, it's phenomenal. I believe the hype, it is really that good.
It is.
It's really a lot of fun. It's very, the puzzles are smart. They're not too smart. You know, there was only one or two times where I got stuck and, you know, had to take a break and think about the puzzles. But for the most part, it's extremely enjoyable. It gives you a great backstory of Portal and the Portal universe and who you are and GLaDOS and that whole thing. And my concern, I had two concerns going into it. One, that they wouldn't be able to do a full game around Portal, and two, that they were going to introduce too many things, because they had the gels and, you know, but Valve makes AAA games, and they really nailed it and knocked it out of the park with this one. And I've played a little bit of the co-op, but waiting for a friend of mine to get through the single player so we can roll through the co-op hopefully this weekend. So
I'm thinking that I would prefer to play the co-op on my PS3 because it's just going to run a lot better than it will on my PC. And so now I don't have a Bluetooth headset, and I'm wondering if the USB headset that I'm speaking on right now will work with my PS3.
I think it does.
I need to test that. But, you know, I was thinking the other day that Portal and Portal 2 would not exist if not for Metroid Prime. They're not the same kind of game, but I think Metroid Prime was the first game that really proved you could do first-person platforming and first-person puzzle solving. It's easy to forget about that, but Metroid Prime, there's really more puzzle solving than there is shooting. And Portal 2 is actually a lot of the same kinds of puzzles. It's a lot about looking around the room and trying to find the features that are interactive and the things that you can do and, you know, how do I get up there? How do I manipulate these contraptions and activate these mechanisms to, you know, so I can turn on the elevator and then I can get up to that other place and then grab the thing. And it's very similar. And I think the magic that goes on in your brain when you solve this stuff is very much the same thing.
Yeah, there is, you know, we were talking about it on the show last week, but the aha moment that you get when you solve something. And I never even thought about Metroid, but that's very true because I know there were a lot of parts in Prime that I got stuck in. I was like, God, how the hell, what do I do here? You know, and like, I need to get there. I just don't know how to get there. And, mm-hmm. You know, at least there's no backtracking in Portal. So
there's not. Yeah. There's backtracking in Radiant Historia, but we'll maybe talk about that later. But Billy, other than Portal 2, which is awesome, what else have you been playing?
I still need to go back and finish up Pilotwings on 3DS. I kind of let that go to the wayside. I was doing some consulting on a game that I needed to prioritize. You know, work is good.
How's your puss in Nintendox?
The cat is still basically sitting there. It does play with you, you know. It's all right. I mean,
but you play with it more than it plays with you, right?
Yeah, you know, I get a kick out of it. It's, you know, Nintendogs is Nintendogs. It's a game you fuck with. It's not really a game. It's just something to kind of screw around with, and it's cute and adorable, and it's a great way to show off the system to, like, non-gamers. Like, if I was going to show that off to my parents or my sister, you know, that's what I mean, Pilotwings would be like, ugh, but, like,
yeah,
something as simple as petting your dog or throwing a frisbee or waving a yarn string or wand thing to a cat, like, that's something that is easy to comprehend more than hang gliding.
But for you, I mean, I assume you played the original Nintendogs.
I did a little bit. I've invested a little bit more of my time in this one just because, you know, with Street Pass and walking around and using the pedometer, and you can walk your dog, theoretically, I guess. And
can you walk the cat?
I don't think so. I've seen people try this.
I've seen people. Have you tried it with Louie?
No, those people are assholes. Cats don't walk. You know, cats do what they want. You know, yeah. I group those people with the same type of people that put clothes on dogs.
Yeah.
Seriously, get a life or get a kid. If you really want a child and put clothes on them, get it.
Walk your kids.
Yeah, walk your kids. You know, hey, I see kids on leashes too. You know?
Oh yeah. They behave better than cats do when you put a leash on them.
Yeah, I don't see that happening, but it's fun. I mean, the problem is, and you guys know this, there's not a lot of software for 3DS right now. You know, yeah. The launch wasn't very strong. As a Pilotwings fan, I'm happy with it, but I know it's really short. I wish Monster had more time with it and would have made it a full-fledged Pilotwings game, but... You know, I know a lot of people are talking about what Ghost Recon is also pretty good.
Buggy, but very good.
You know, I tried Pro Evolution, I keep calling it Winning 11. That's actually pretty solid. But I mean, these games aren't really fully featured. Street Fighter's the most fully featured game out of the bunch. But yeah, you know, I am looking forward to Zelda, you know, hearing more news about the frame rate today or whatever. You know, knowing that it'll have the extra quest or...
Master quest and the boss rush mode.
Billy, are you impressed that the Ocarina of Time remake runs at 30 frames per second?
If it looks better, I mean, from my understanding is that it's already crisper anyways. Great, you know. I've not played through Ocarina of Time for a very long time. I didn't even replay it on GameCube, so... I'm kind of drawn to it. At least it's a game with some heft to it. And I, you know, I wish they were adding a lot more features, you know, a boss rush mode. Yay. You know,
yeah.
Yeah.
It's not really enough for me. I mean, in my opinion, they could have probably granted they could sell them separately, but why not do a bundle with, you know, especially since the anniversary, like do Majora with this.
Yeah.
Show have both N64 games. But that I am very much looking forward to.
But it's all about Super Mario.
Super Mario, I think, is great. I'm also looking forward to Star Fox. I mean, I was a big N64 guy, so I hate to open up a can of worms and say these are games that I'm looking forward to playing again, because I don't, you know, I want Nintendo to craft new experiences. And I remember the Game Boy Advance and the numerous rehashes for that system. And... You know, I want new stuff. Like, I hope E3 is just a wealth of new games. Fine, if you want to do rehashes, put them in the eShop like you do Virtual Console. But
yeah,
these aren't $40 game experiences. And I think the pricing on these games are really, you know, Nintendo even said this week that they expected to make more money on and sell through more, and they didn't. Maybe that speaks for the fact that they had a shit lineup and not all the features are... I mean, we still don't have the eShop or the browser or anything like that.
Yeah, I think it's that combined with the fact that I don't think people are totally sold on 3D either as a buying point.
It's true.
Yeah, and Nintendo's blamed that on the difficulty of marketing 3D because people don't have 3D TVs.
Well, it would help if you tried as opposed to letting Capcom do it with Street Fighter 4.
Yeah.
They still haven't done... I mean, maybe they're waiting for the summer movie season, but I still think they should run 3DS ads in front of 3D movies in theaters.
Yeah, I think that would make sense.
I haven't seen that yet, but maybe Thor will be kind of kick that off because Thor's in 3D.
Yeah.
But that seems like a huge opportunity.
That would be smart.
Well, the 3DS does have that magical moment when you first experience it because it's tricking your eyes in this new way. But that doesn't connect through advertising. I mean, if you tell someone that it's in 3D, they're like, okay, I've seen 3D. And they don't realize they haven't seen 3D like this until they actually
play the system. They haven't seen interactive 3D.
And not that many people have actually played the system yet. Mm-hmm. It's still a low number. So the rest of the year is going to be really interesting for 3DS. But, I mean, Nintendo is in a good position having launched this earlier in the year, because by the time the holiday season rolls around, they're going to have a much better software lineup. And it's going to blow up.
Well, I mean, we still have all those games from the E3 announcement that are in some state of development.
Yeah.
Interestingly, though, they were almost all third party. And I wonder if that's back to their strategy of let's not crowd out the third parties with our stuff.
So, Billy, I know you have to go. Is there anything else that you've been playing or anything else that you want to say before you go?
Unfortunately, I haven't been. I have a backlog that I need to get back to.
You've been working. I mean, that's good.
I have been working, so that is very good. Yeah, I hope that the NFL draft is good this evening and tomorrow, and I hope the Packers get more players to bolster up the world champion Green Bay Packers team.
Now, I know that you know your team isn't involved in playoff hockey this time of year, but have you been watching any playoff hockey?
I have my yes, the Minnesota Wild. They kind of shit the bed this year in the worst way. They just decided, yeah, we're in fifth place. Let's just tank the rest of the season. Let's have a lot of injuries, and they fell apart. But sorry that I got to take off, guys. But thanks again for having me on, and hopefully I can be on again soon.
Yes, sir. Well, thank you very much for coming, and we will see you at E3, right?
Absolutely.
See you there, man. We'll go play the Nintendo stream.
Ugh.
All right, Billy. See you later.
All right. Take care, guys.
So, let's, now that Billy's gone, we'll get into normal new business. So I've been playing, well, first off, I finished the Portal 2 campaign, and one other thing I want to say about it is that there was a large chunk of it, like maybe 3 hours kind of in the middle, that I played while I had a friend over, and we sort of played together. We were trading off the controller a little bit, and we weren't playing co-op. It was just the single player, but just having two people there trying to work this stuff out in our heads, and we were talking about the puzzles, flipping our shit every time we solve something, you know? It was just
literally
this glorious moment of, wah! It's just that kind of a game. So I would say it's also a very good game to play with other people around. Kind of like, like Zack and Wiki and some of the other puzzle games that we've mentioned on the show before. It's very good for that kind of thing. The co-op just sounds insane, though. Having four portals, I don't even... It's hard for me to comprehend what that would be like. So, anyway, I also kind of finished Fallout New Vegas in that I played a lot more of it, and then I got to the end of the game, and in the final battle, the game froze on me, like hard locked my system 3 times in a row.
Man.
So the game literally would not let me finish the story.
And this is post bug fix mode.
Oh yes, this is with all the patches.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, it's notoriously buggy, that game.
Score one for Bethesda.
The game was pretty stable up to that point. There was one other time near the end of the game that it froze, and I was very frustrated by that, but then I reloaded a save and went through there, and the second time it was fine. So I was like, okay, whatever. I'm not that picky. But then I got to literally the final boss of the game, and every single time I tried to fight him, the game would freeze. And I just, after 3 or 4 times of this, I'm like, fuck this.
I didn't really want to fight him.
You don't need to finish that game, Johnny.
Well, no, I don't.
You'll just have a big gaping hole in your heart for the rest of your life. But
you know how some people throw controllers across the room?
Yeah.
I slam discs back into envelopes.
that's really getting the aggression out, isn't it?
Yeah, that's how I dealt with Fallout. So basically, I think that's the last time I play a game by Obsidian Entertainment, and it's too bad. I mean, there are a lot of things I like about the game, and I think the writing in particular, the story is good. I got to meet Chris Avellone last year at PAX East. He seemed like a nice guy. I think he's kind of their creative, the guy in charge of their stories, and he's very highly regarded in the industry, and I respect that a lot, but if you won't let me finish your fucking game, then I'm not playing your next game.
Yeah.
So, luckily, I mean, like, I talked last week about how Skyrim might be more up my alley, and that's being made by Bethesda.
Yeah.
So, not that they have a much better track record on bugginess,
yeah,
but it's somewhat better, or I should say it's not as bad.
I mean, I just always wonder how stuff like that gets out the door. Like, I just wonder, because at some point, somebody made
that
call.
Because we can patch it on day one. That's why it gets out the door.
Yeah, that's the whole thing. Like, bugs like that, I mean, you can't tell me that somebody did not see that.
the responsibility ultimately falls on the producer of the game, because that's the person who decides that we can't keep working on this any longer, we have to send it off, you know, and that's the person who sets up the schedule in the first place. And I don't blame the QA people, because
no.
generally, and it, you know, we have friends like Ed Shee and Steven Rodriguez, Windy Man. I mean, we know people who've gone through QA before, and they tell us, like, look, if you found a bug, you bet your ass we found that bug. And we told the people about it, and somebody higher up said, eh, we can get by without fixing that.
Yep.
We don't have time. And these QA people get super frustrated by it, because they're doing their jobs, and they get blamed when this stuff doesn't get worked out. But ultimately, it's the responsibility of the person who greenlights the game.
Yep.
Game completely wipes the hard drive on your Xbox, it's fine. Don't worry about it.
And at this point, it's probably up to the publisher, actually, because, you know, those guys would probably go back in and try to find more bug. I have a feeling when they did that big patch, they kind of went for the low-hanging fruit.
Probably, yeah.
And, you know, they probably know very well that these kinds of bugs, I mean, this is a game-breaking bug. I had to turn off my Xbox and turn it back on.
I mean, I've had that happen a couple times, but never repeatedly in the same event.
This was a repeatable offense, and it wouldn't let me finish the game that I had put 30 hours into, and I'm like, okay, fuck this. I'm done. Anyway, that's Fallout New Vegas. On one level, I can recommend it. On another, I can't recommend a game that you can't finish, that I couldn't finish. That's fucked up, man.
Yeah.
That's unacceptable. Especially 6 months after the game comes out and it's been patched to high hell.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Now I'm all worked up. But now I'm going to talk about Mega Man Legends 2, because, you know, we found out the prototype version of Legends 3 is going to be a launch title for...
I apologize if I start to sound wistful when we're discussing this game.
Wistful? Did you lose it?
Yes.
Oh. How much is it worth to you? I'm kidding.
Enough to download it online. That's how much it's worth to
yeah,
me.
Yeah. Well, Mega Man Legends 2 should come out on PSN or something, you know, for PlayStation 1 Classics. It's a good game. You know, the first Mega Man Legends was, I don't know, like 1998 or so, and Capcom later ported it to N64 as Mega Man 64. It sounds like that was an okay port, but lost a couple things in the transition, I guess. And then Mega Man Legends 2 came out in 2000, so this was a very late PS1 game. It was the year that PS2 came out, and it's very polished. I mean, a lot of these PS1 games, especially the 3D ones, are kind of hard to go back and look at. And I think Mega Man, I'm playing it on my PS3, which does some smoothing, and the load times are improved. But it comes across really well, actually. It's presented very nicely. And the Mega Man Legends series, and this is the reason I went back to it, because I rented the first one, and I played some of it. And then a few years ago, I bought Legends 2 used at some store for like $4. And it's been sitting on my shelf ever since. I have tried it once, but I didn't really get very far. So I was like, you know, if I'm interested in Legends 3, I really should go back and actually play Legends 2 since I have it. And you know, get more acquainted with the series and kind of find out what to expect. And tell you guys what to expect. Not you, James, but the audience. And Mega Man Legends is very much an RPG.
Yep.
Which is strange. And I knew that, you know, I'd even played some of the first one. But still, when you get into it and you start to get a feel for the mechanics and how everything's put together, it's really an RPG. I mean, this is straight up a Japanese RPG.
Just with real-time battles.
Yeah, yeah. And the battles are okay in these games. They really don't feel much like Mega Man.
No.
And they don't feel that great because his movement is very stilted.
He's a tank. He moves by pivoting on a singular point.
Yeah, I mean, he can strafe, but it's very reliant on this lock-on mechanism, because the game would be almost unplayable without it. Just with camera controls not good, and Mega Man moves in a very clunky way. He doesn't feel tight and smooth like he does in the normal 2D Mega Man games, you know. But the combat's okay. It's not terrible. I think the only problem is that on the boss enemies, it just takes forever to kill them. They have these long life bars, and you can upgrade your Mega Buster to be more powerful, but even still, they're tests of endurance more than anything, the boss battles.
Well, yeah, that's a good way of putting it. The game wants you to spend inordinate amounts of, what's the currency called?
Zenny.
Zenny, yeah.
Yeah.
Upgrading your armament But and you do it by basically detritus. You just find lying around. You take it to roll one. She's like, I can turn this into a weapon.
Yeah, this broken vacuum cleaner.
You can use to collect
a long plastic tube.
Yeah, it's like, okay, do that. Then you come back and she's made you a nuclear weapon. I mean, you're like, how did you turn a blender and a lawnmower into an implement of death? I don't care, but I can destroy bosses with it.
Yeah, yeah, and those do help a lot.
But it'll cost you a fortune to get them. And you end up having to basically grind for money to get the weapons you want to destroy these bosses. Hmm. And I know in the first Mega Man Legends game, the final boss, I had this weapon that once I fully upgraded it, I could basically walk into his chamber, blast him about 9 times, and it's game over. But the first time I fought him, it took like an hour.
James, if you had to guess, based on what you know about me, mm-hmm. what do you think my least favorite aspect of this game would be?
The level design.
Nope.
Really?
I can put up with that.
The controls are kind of busted, but I'm guessing it's probably the story then.
It's the voice acting.
Yeah, well, it's bad voice acting because it's that late 90s PlayStation voice acting bullshit.
And let's be clear, it's the best voice acting in the Mega Man franchise by far.
Well, yeah, it's not a high bar.
But it's still, everybody talks like this!
And there's a lot of it. There's a lot of voice acting in these games.
Including Mega Man, who's a man!
Well, he's a kid. He's supposed to be like 13. I mean, he's a person too. So I guess
right,
he
that's
just hasn't
the weird
dropped
thing.
Yet.
I didn't realize that. I mean, I know he's called Mega Man Volnut.
Yeah, he's a person.
Yeah, I was reading some book I found on a shelf in one of the rooms in the game, and it mentioned that the character Gramps found Mega Man when he was a baby and raised him. So he's literally a dude in a suit. He's not a cyborg. He's not an android like he is in the other games. So.
Well, this kind of comes back up in ZX, where
really?
there is an AI that is the Mega Man, but it's a suit, essentially.
Well, like my whole world's just been blown. It's like, what happened to the series I grew up with? I mean, Jesus.
So Mega Man Legends, according to some Capcom release timeline back in the 90s, is like many, many millennia in the future beyond Mega Man X.
Okay.
Like way, way in the future.
Where they find a boy in swaddling clothes and feel
yeah,
the...
Yeah, they find the Messiah and put him in a cyborg body suit.
Feel the need to stick him
Who's
in some...
Who's his father? There was no father.
In a costume of
they
Mega
put him,
Man?
They put him in armor and have him go raid ancient temples to find radioactive energy crystals that are also currency. Yes.
That's right, he's a digger.
Oh, Lord.
It's so screwy, but I still enjoy Legends because it's just...
It's super goofy. I mean, it's
it
so
is.
Goofy.
And it's supposed to be goofy. I mean, it's not like, it's just
sure.
goofy.
It's not, I don't have a problem with the tone of the storytelling. I have a problem with the execution.
Yeah.
I have a problem with the production of it, and especially the localization itself.
Yeah, it has the game itself, though, has kind of this interesting, like, world aspect to it that,
yeah.
I guess that was kind of new at the time. I mean, I can't think of many games that had that kind of overworld when it came out.
Well, Final Fantasy.
Yeah, well, yeah, but those are like, those weren't something that you moved around in the same way. They weren't action-y games.
No, I mean, the world of Mega Man Legends 2, at least, the first one I don't remember as much about, I think it was similar, but it's very similar to Skies of Arcadia.
Yeah, it is.
Because Mega Man and Roll have their own airship, and they have it at the beginning of the game, and they're not pirates. I guess the bad guys are pirates, but they pretty much do the same thing. I mean,
they're diggers.
They call themselves diggers, but they're grave robbers.
Yeah, they basically raid ancient tombs and steal the form of energy they used back then and use it as currency.
Right.
That's their job. Their job is to steal stuff. But they're dead, so it's okay. Don't worry about it.
But I do think the level design is an issue in that these dungeons that you go to, these ruins, the ruins that you visit as Mega Man, this is where the action part of the game takes place.
They basically feel like randomly generated, but they're not.
Yeah, they're just a lot of hallways.
They go nowhere.
They're really like 3 generations ago feeling. They're just really old and not very interesting.
Where am I? Why are there enemies falling on me from the ceiling? Why is there a hole in there with enemies in it? What is going on?
You have to rely very heavily on the map to figure out where you've already been. A lot of rooms, you have to look at the map. It has that red marker that shows which door you came in through. Mm-hmm. And that's very important because it's very easy to go through the wrong door, to just go back the way you came. Because once you fight a couple guys and you get turned around, you're like, oh shit, all 4 walls look identical.
This room is square.
Yeah, where do I, should I go north or south? Or so the navigation of the ruins is a problem because they're so bland and generic looking, which is, you know, partly the technology at the time.
Right. I mean, that should be fixed in a 3DS game.
I hope so. Yeah, I mean, I think as I'm going through this, I'm kind of noticing a few areas where the game really has a lot of room for potential improvement.
Yeah.
And yet a lot of things about the game, I think, hold up really well, like the fact that all the cutscenes are in-game.
Right.
They're told with dynamic camera angles, and the characters are talking, and they have... I guess there was lip-syncing in the Japanese version. It's completely lost in the English one, but it's very like Star Fox 64 looking, you know, mm-hmm. in the way the cutscenes are presented. So it's not a bunch of crappy FMV, which would have been normal at the time. So, I mean, in some ways I am very impressed by the presentation. And, you know, I think the world is very rich and interesting. The idea that they're living in this maybe like post, it doesn't look post-apocalyptic, but clearly there was some kind of ancient culture.
Right.
That their current civilization is sort of built on top of.
There was an apocalypse at one point, but it's way in the past.
Well, yeah, so far in the past, I don't... But yeah, I mean, basically, they're sort of discovering the secret hidden history of this
and
world.
And then stealing it,
yeah.
And using it to power their ships to steal more of it.
Which is very like Indiana Jones, right? So... And Mass Effect, for that matter.
The games, the world itself, though, it's full of these little... things, like little hidden things you can do. Like one of the more famous ones in the first game is in the main hub city, there's this can on the ground.
Yeah.
And you can kick it.
It's in Legends 2 as well. I think there was a soccer ball in the first one, actually. But
yeah, and you kick it behind the counter of a shop and they yell at you or something like that. I can't remember what it is. And it's if you kick it into the trash can, you get something for cleaning up litter. But it's incredibly difficult to aim where you want to kick it because it's a can.
Yeah.
And he's hard to turn. But it's just little things like that that made the world seem really alive by, you know, 1999 standards.
Absolutely. It is a very rich world, for sure. And it's a very intriguing world. And the story actually is kind of interesting. It's not told well, but the story itself on paper is actually pretty interesting. And I think you have to get into it because the game is very story-driven. You know, the mechanics aren't that great.
No.
So it helps if you're invested. But, you know, the other thing is I do like the fact that you're buying upgrades for Mega Man and you're finding trash all over the place and you're having Roll make new weapons out of it. I mean, that brings across the RPG aspect of it because Mega Man doesn't level up. You know,
no.
he gets money and you use money to buy parts. And those, I mean, when you get like a, you know, like a range plus two or an attack plus two, you feel the difference. Like, it makes the combat very different. So it's really worth your time to do that stuff.
So is it kind of patterned after like Super Mario RPG or something like that?
In terms of the depth of the RPG mechanics, I'd say it's similar.
It's much more build your own Mega Man. I mean...
It is some of that. It's almost like Armored Core. It's not that complicated, but, you know, it's... You have a lot of options and limited slots to put this stuff, so you can kind of choose which attributes of, in terms of armor, in terms of weapons, that, you know, you can choose how you want to build him out to suit your playing style.
Yeah, that sounds pretty cool.
And there's a bit of Zelda in there, too. There's definitely some 3D Zelda influence over this series. I mean, I just completed a dungeon where these floors, at some point, the floors became electrified, and they were really damaging and hard to get out of, and the enemies were just all over me. And so I went back to Roll and I found a couple of parts and got her to build the hover boots,
yes,
which I was able to install on Mega Man, and that made me immune to the electrified floor because he's technically hovering over them.
For me, it was when I got in the first game, I think it was more important for me in this one, where you get this vacuum attachment that you can use to suck up Zenny.
Mm-hmm.
Because it would always be like you'd kill a bunch of enemies when you'd walk into a room. By the time you were done killing, the Zenny would have disappeared. Once you get the vacuum, it's like whoosh, and they all just come flying at you. And like the amount of money you could make at that point skyrocketed because you weren't losing so much Zenny to it going away.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind having that for myself in the sequel. So we shall see. But I am definitely looking forward to Legends 3. And it's been over 10 years since Legends 2. So it'll be really interesting to see, you know, how they approach it. How much of it is fan service and how much of it is like we're making a new game that is modern and feels good. But the good news is, I can tell you right now, it's going to be an RPG. So it's a 3DS RPG, so that alone is something to be excited about.
I mean, I know the game is a labor of love of the series creator.
Yeah.
He basically wanted to make this game for a long time, and finally he got Capcom to do it.
All right. Well, anyway, that's Mega Man Legends 2. I'm going to keep playing it. I'm like 3 or 4 hours in, so there's a lot more for me to do.
Oh, yeah. Those games are long.
When I finish it, James, maybe I'll send it to you. If you want to play it again, if it's more than just wanting to ogle it up on your shelf, if you actually want to play through it again, I'd be happy to loan it to you.
I can get a hold of a copy if I need to.
Okay. I just actually, I recently loaned Dragon Quest IV to Nathan Mustafa, and I guess he played through it. I don't know. He sent it back to me, but he
this game sucks!
Well, he sent it back with Dragon Quest VI, which I wanted to borrow from him. Well, that's the one that just came out, like, in February. So I'm I might have something to report on that next week if I get around to it. I'm still playing a lot of Radiant Historia. I'm, like, 45 hours in, and I'm still not sure that I'm actually near...
You've got to be near the end at that point, then.
Okay, well, there's still a ton of stuff that I could go back, and there's a lot of side quests and stuff that... I mean, you mentioned this when you were reviewing it, that I could probably go back and spend 10 hours just cleaning up little mm-hmm. things that are optional. And it's... To some extent, it's tempting to do so, but...
I missed one, because it tells you the number of them. On the bottom, it's like 207, and I was at like 206, and I'm like, I have no idea where it is in the timeline, so game... No.
it's just not worth your time.
At some point in history, I missed something. But the odds of me just finding it on a whim are completely tiny.
I am struck, though, by how much... The game is almost literally about backtracking.
Yeah, it is.
And it's curious to me that you like it so much, James, when you seem to hate this aspect of the Metroid series.
Because when you backtrack in this game, you're seeing different things. I mean, a lot of times when you go backwards... The world has changed from when you were there the first time. And if it hasn't, you can just skip it with the start button.
Yeah.
Be like, I don't want to see this anymore. Start.
Yeah, the start button is your friend in Radiant Historia.
I was like, oh, I can skip this shit? Skip. Yeah.
Because when you go back in time to a certain point, it will replay all the conversations and the cutscenes and everything.
And you're exactly. like, oh. Wow.
Which sometimes is good, because if you miss some piece of information that you need to tell you where to go... Then I mean, it's good that it's in
salvation.
There that you have the option to go back and replay that stuff. But
I mean, you can literally go back to the start of the game and replay the entire fucking game.
Yeah, let me put it this way. John, have you done – we're just getting to John anyway with a Chrono Train update.
Yes.
have you done the side quest where you get the Sun Stone and you take it back in time and let it charge up with sun energy?
No, I have not done that.
Okay.
We should just start making up things that don't happen in this game and ask John if he's there yet.
That definitely – it's my favorite side quest in the game because it's so involved. It involves you like jumping back and forth in time a few, you know, several times and try to track this thing down. It's really cool and it's worth it in the end. It pays off in the end, so it's really worth all the trouble that you go through. But it's one of the few side quests that takes place over several different eras of time.
Yeah.
And a lot of the side quests in Radiant Historia feel like that.
Yeah,
it's like you do one thing, you get some item, and then you have to go in the other timeline where that thing would never exist. There's no way you would ever get it in the other timeline. And you show it to a dude, and he's like, oh my god, how did you get that? Well, never mind, let's go.
Yeah, there's one where this person's planting flowers in the garden of Alistel. And she's like, can you get these seeds? I need to plant them right now or they won't grow.
Yeah.
But you don't get them till way later in the game.
And I think you even get them in the other timeline, maybe.
Yeah, and she's like... Holy crap, how'd you get these? Okay, I'm going to stick them in the ground now. They're like, shouldn't you be more concerned about how I got these?
There's an excessive lack of credulity in the world of Radiant Historia.
There's no way on earth you should have this ancient relic from our family. Okay, thanks.
But anyways, right. Enough about that.
There's tons of that, but that's part of the game, though. I love it. It's really fun. So anyway, John, how are you doing in Chrono Trigger?
The Chrono Train rolls on. Choo-woo! I'm at the point now where I'm thinking, are there side quests that I need to do because I'm at a stopping point? I've gone down into the Ocean Palace, and I am fighting the twin golems.
Okay. You're not to the end of the game yet.
Yeah, but the thing is, though, this boss battle, I am getting stomped out. My characters are getting two-shot.
Yeah.
And I don't know because they drop Iron Sphere, which halves your hit points.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
what they do, I mean, right out of the gate, I don't even have a chance to attack. They drop that, halve my hit points, and then they hit me with some other attack. And so one person goes down, and then they half the hit points of person number two. Then they attack that person with fireballs, and they go down. And it's like, I mean, seriously, like, no joke, I maybe get a chance to put in, like, one attack, and, like, everybody's dead. And I can't really figure out, like, there's nothing I can do, like, haste-wise. I mean, I've tried different characters, and there's nothing I can do right now to get that first attack in. The boss always gets that first attack in, and then after that, it's just all downhill.
Well, it's definitely one of the toughest bosses in the game, and if you're having that much trouble, you should probably either go grind elsewhere, and that palace is a good place to level up.
Yeah.
So it might be worth spending Chrono Trigger's not a game where you need to grind a lot, but doing it a little bit can make a big difference.
Yeah.
So it might be worth doing that, and if it's feasible for you to get back out of that dungeon, then there might be a couple other things you could do in the meantime that would make you stronger so that you could then go back. But I don't know if that's feasible right now at the point that you're at.
Well, I mean, I can easily get out of there. But okay. I'm at the point where there's obviously something I'm missing, or my characters just aren't strong enough.
In terms of strategy, I mean, there is a strategy. There's probably a few different good strategies for beating that.
Yeah.
But if you don't have time to get off a move, then strategy is probably not the issue.
Yeah, because they're getting stomped out. I mean, I was thinking, like, maybe is there some armor that I get that automatically reflects their attacks or something like that? Like,
probably not. If there's anything you can equip to give yourself haste or just increase your speed, that would probably be helpful.
Yeah, see, I don't have
again,
really anything
think
like
about
that.
This. Defense won't help you that much if they're automatically halving your HPs.
Yep.
So if you can sacrifice defense for speed, that might be a good thing to do for that battle.
Yeah, I'm wondering if maybe my characters aren't high enough and maybe like Marl is missing some sort of group healing spell.
Yes, she does learn something like that. And there should also be some combo attacks that you can use for group healing. But of course that uses up two people, so it's not as... I mean, Frog should definitely have a group heal.
He doesn't, because I mean, I've kept him on the shelf for a while because I know, like, especially like what I've been doing lately, you know, it's been very helpful, like, because everything has been like, okay, well, attack it with fire or attack it with ice, and of course the best people to do that are Marl and Lucca.
Yeah, Frog is a very, very, very useful character because he has powerful attacks and he can heal. And there's not really any other character that has quite that combination.
Yeah, because I haven't used him for healing at all.
Oh.
I didn't know that. That's a Johnny Metz pro tip.
Yeah, and later on, there's a side quest you can do later on that makes Frog significantly more powerful than he was before.
Okay.
But you probably don't have access to that quite yet. All right, guys. Well, James, I don't know what you've got here, so surprise me.
So, not a whole lot. I've still been playing Phantom Brave. It's still very difficult. It's still killing me very slowly.
But you want to keep playing it.
Well, I mentioned this in the email. I didn't really plan to talk about it, but I'll say it's a funny game. I mean, when you lose, it's usually because the game did something completely whack, and you're like, wow.
Which is much better than freezing.
You're like, what the hell just happened? I just lost to an incredulous cat in a happy minecart. Screw you, game.
At least it's cheerful about it.
I mean, how can you be mad when that happens? You just can't. But I'll get through it eventually in the next 6 years. I also, because I didn't feel like I had suffered enough this week, decided I was going to download Ikaruga. I used to be good at this game. Not good at this game, actually.
I thought I would do that after we saw it at PAX East this year, and then I didn't. Of course, I mean, I still have my GameCube copy, but it's a pain in the ass. It's an import, so I have to pull out an actual GameCube to play it. So that's
I remember thinking,
worth the effort, really.
This purchase can't possibly go wrong. Oh, it went really fucking wrong.
Yeah, when you get smoked bad.
So I got through the first stage, which is really easy, just teaching you the buttons basically. And I hit the second stage, bam, done.
Yeah. Oh, shit gets real in the second stage because it's only got five, so it has to ramp up pretty fast, right?
Yeah, and I got smoked. But like, I got through it on, and then after my first continue, which isn't a continue, it's just game over.
Yeah.
Just game the fuck over.
But you earn more lives or more continues as you play it more.
Right.
It's based on the amount of time that you've played, right?
But at the start, it's game over.
Yeah.
You're done. and for whatever reason, that just struck me immediately as the most unfair thing I've ever seen in my life. I'm like, after that, you've decided, nope, start over from the beginning. I'll see you later. And you get back there and you immediately get smoked again. You're like, you know what, game? I don't have time for this. I got through the third stage and then was immediately wiped out, which I felt like, okay, in an hour and a half, I went from having not played this game in almost a decade to the third stage. I feel like I've accomplished something with my life. And then I put the controller down and said, all right, I don't want to think about Ikaruga ever again.
Do you find that in these arcade-style games that it's a big problem that you always have to play through that first stage every time you want to play it? Because that it gets on my nerves after
a
while.
So what you do is, as you beat bosses, you unlock sectional play. But I'm not sure if you can pick up there and continue or if you only play that one chapter. And I don't want to try it, beat the third boss, and then find out, shit, that's all I get to do?
Yeah, I think that might only be like literally one level at a time, and then it takes you back to the menu. Because I have this problem like in Everyday Shooter, which I played yesterday just out of the blue. But I mean, I pick it up occasionally just for a quick round. And it's a good game, but it's very much the same way. Like in Everyday Shooter, I think there are 8 levels. And the 8th one, I have not been able to unlock because I always run out of lives before I get to it.
Right, it's a slow burn.
Yeah. And it's just, like, the first level, I mean, it's great. All the levels are great. But, like, the first one, I've played through so many fucking times that I could do it with my eyes closed. And it's just like, it just takes that much longer to get to the part that's actually challenging me.
Right.
You know, and I wish I could just, you know, let me skip to level 7 and have 1 life left, which is pretty realistic.
Right.
That's a typical scenario. And that way, I don't have any special advantage, but I also don't have to sit through the first 6 levels again, mm-hmm. which I know I can get through every time.
Right. The levels in Ikaruga aren't very long,
mm-hmm.
but you're going to die a lot.
But they're exactly the same every single time.
Yes.
Yeah.
So if you know how to get through the first level without dying, it's just rudimentary. It's just tedious to do it every single time.
Well, I think maybe that's the biggest advantage you have is that because you know the level, you can maybe get there with more lives next time.
Yeah.
But holy shit. Holy shit. Why is this game so hard?
You know, I have to kind of applaud them for actually having the balls to actually say, okay, this is only for the hardest of the hardcore shooter fan, and we're going to completely tailor it to that audience.
It's like, how did it happen that this game got to be this hard? I mean, like, in my head, I was like, yeah, that's a hard game, but I can handle it. I've taken care of that game before.
Right.
And then now I get it in my hands. I'm like, holy shit, what happened?
Yeah, it's kind of like a timeless test of skill, though.
Yeah.
Like I said, I did beat this game.
Really?
Yeah.
I think my record is like the level 4 boss. I think that's the best I've ever
done.
But
now I feel like I have to beat it because everyone on Xbox Live who's friended me will know if I don't.
If they have Ikaruga.
Mm-hmm. It's like they'll see his score. Oh, shit, that score is terrible. And now I have to go, fuck
this
game.
Shades of Geometry Wars.
Peer pressure.
Yep.
You have to go down. The peer pressures that I have, you know, there's only one person on my friends list who has it. Mm. He's a former staff member. Can you guess who it is? It's pretty easy.
Grant?
No. It's Ty.
Oh,
yeah, of course.
Sure. Okay.
Of course Ty has this game.
I've definitely come close to buying it a couple times.
And of course, Ty has a score that makes absolutely no sense.
Well, yeah.
You look at it, you're like, can a number have that many digits?
The thing about Ty is Ty only plays like 10 games, period. But he's amazing at all the ones he plays. Like, he's the best Guilty Gear player you'll ever find.
It's frightening to watch people with these scores. You think, I'll never do this. I'll never beat this game.
You know, even if you've never played Ikaruga, I would say it's worth going to YouTube and just look up a perfect run on Ikaruga. Because the whole thing, I mean, you can beat the entire game in like 20 minutes.
Don't do this if you have epilepsy.
And it's astonishing to look at. Like, even if you don't know what's going on, you'll just stare at it with your mouth open. Like, oh my god, this game is so, it's beautiful, so it looks cool, but you're just like, what the hell? How could
it's
anyone do this?
It's not even like the hardest game in that genre, but it's just so, it's the hardest, quote, mainstream game in that genre.
Yeah, sure. All the rest of bullet hell, just ridiculous.
Yeah, they're like, they're just games nobody on Earth has ever heard of except Tai Shooter.
Yeah, and they aren't even particularly well crafted, they're just...
No, they're just how much shit can we put on
and
screen
Ikaruga's
the whole time?
Beautifully made. I mean, it's just a stunning game.
Yep. And it still looks really good in HD. It looks amazing.
Especially in Tate mode.
Yes, as we found out at PAX East.
And that's a Dreamcast game.
Well, it was improved somewhat for GameCube.
Yeah, it's fun, I guess. I think I'm having fun. Maybe it's just destroyed me mentally, and I'm just like, This is fun. I'm losing every time.
Did you guys try the demo for Outland?
No.
It came out this week on Xbox?
No, I haven't.
It's like Ikaruga, but a platformer.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah. I mean, it's a bullet hell platformer, and you switch between red and blue. Like, it looks a lot like Ikaruga.
There is a phrase I never wanted to hear. It's a bullet hell platformer.
Well, I played the demo and I really liked it. So once I have a little bit of cash flow, I think I'm going to pick that up. It's
really
intriguing.
It sounds like a bullet hell. Fuck you.
It seems to be very, very, very well made. And it's basically the concept of Ikaruga, but in a genre that I have a lot more aptitude for. So and it's a 2D platformer, but it's bullet hell. Like, there's literally bullets all over the screen, but you're running around and switching colors. And it looks amazing. I'm pretty excited to play.
That sounds horrifying.
Try it. You should try it. It's really cool. Really.
Am I going to have an Xbox when I'm done? Am I going to throw the controller? Yeah. Screw you, Xbox!
Aim for the wall, man. If you're going to throw a controller, throw it at the wall.
I'm just going to have to go back to playing Toy Soldiers. I can deal with that game.
Yeah, kind of along the same type of game. Another game I've been looking at. It was apparently done by the same people that made Strider back in the day, called Moon Diver.
Oh yeah, yeah. I played the demo for that.
How was that?
The demo, it's not a good demo, because the thing, it does play kind of like Strider, but it also reminded me a little bit of, like, the Subspace Emissary. Like, it's this kind of action platformer that it feels really loose and sort of undefined.
Floaty.
And your character has, like, a very limited number of melee attacks, and then each character has a magic spell that you're apparently expected to use very frequently.
While he brawls?
Yeah, well, no, it's like you have this magic attack that basically initiates a cutscene, and it's this long, drawn-out thing. It's like a summon in Final Fantasy VII that you're supposed to use, like, every 30 seconds. And my character only had one of these, so I'm using the same one over and over. And after a while, I was like, is this all there is to this game? It just seemed really shallow, so I didn't buy it.
Yeah.
But you should try it. I mean, you might like it more than I did. I didn't like it as much as I expected to.
Hey guys. This is an aside. I just wanted to point this out in case you wanted to comment on it. The BitTrip announcement that was teased by Gaijin Games is a 6-game compilation coming to the 3DS.
Oh, cool.
That's pretty cool, actually.
So it's Beat, Core, Flux, Fate, Runner, and Void.
Oh, that's excellent.
Yeah, is that BitTrip Saga?
Yeah.
BitTrip Saga.
Yep.
Great. That's a hot package.
Yeah, it is.
And in 3D.
In 3D, which means you'll probably have a seizure and pass out.
I don't know if I could play some of those games in 3D, but I think those games are really well suited for portable gameplay.
This does dissuade me from going into the BitTrip pool, though. I mean, I've been
kind of holding off. I don't have any of those games either, and I've always been sort of like, well, you know,
I'll get around to it.
Yeah, I'll get around to it. But definitely, as one package, once I get a 3DS, I would definitely pick them up.
Yeah, that sounds
right. It's pretty safe to assume this game will be $40, as that is the going rate for 3DS games.
Yeah, but that's okay, though. To me, that's a good deal.
Isn't that kind of actually a better deal?
Yeah.
I mean,
I don't know if it's a bargain, but it's similar.
It would
come out to be close. I'd have
commensurate.
To,
yeah.
Because they all have kind of different prices.
Yeah, some are 8, some are 5, some are, I mean.
It comes out probably about the same, but you can use real money instead of space bucks, and I'm sure eventually the price will fall.
Space bucks!
Yeah. Instead of Wii points, Nintendo points. Well, that's good news. I'm glad you brought that up. So now we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll have a bunch of your listener mail about Project Cafe and 3DS and a whole bunch of other craziness. So stick around. Here's a quick look at the best original content at our website, now playing at NintendoWorldReport.com. First up this week, we've got the best 30DS games, this ongoing feature.
The definitive list.
No, it's not.
Unquestionably the best. In order. It rolls on. We're up to the top 10, and actually by the time you hear this, I believe we'll be in the top 5. We're rolling them out day by day with very thorough write-ups of each game in the top 10, so you really should go check that out. We've also got another, I'm sure it will be controversial, Extra Life for Wii Music.
As
Pedro looks back at this maligned Wii experiment to explain why he actually likes the, quote, game.
Do the dog suit, now! Bark, bark!
Oh, no! And we have a review for Asphalt 3D. Josh turns this 3DS racer inside out looking for fun, but he doesn't find anything. Could this be the worst launch title? You'll have to read the review and find out.
On the review front, we have a review of the Game Controller Combo Pack. Despite the generic name, Zach finds that this value-priced Wii Remote and wireless nunchuck deliver high performance.
And lots of name.
And another review for Donkey Kong Barrel Blast. For some reason, Andrew revisits this 2007 Wii release to retroactively defend the game, yet still gives it a 6.5. Johnny was much harsher and went with a 5.5. Oh, the drama!
Yes. We also have impressions and an interview for Burger Time World Tour. Aaron played the upcoming WiiWare reboot of the classic franchise, and you can read his report on an interview with the developer and publisher.
Finally, we've got Captain America Super Soldier impressions. Jared got to play both the Wii and the DS versions of this movie-based game. Find out whether High Voltage Software can repeat their conduit success with the good Captain. And Griptonite is developing the DS version, which might actually end up being better.
What did they make?
They made the Spider-Man DS games that are really good.
There you go.
Okay, all of this amazing original content is over at NintendoWorldReport.com, along with the latest news and rumors on Project Cafe, so you really got to check it out, man. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the show. Billy's still gone.
I miss him so much.
It's just the three of us. Billy and Greg are both gone. But what we do have is listener mail. Actually, we have a lot of listener mail. We're going to get through as much as we can here. The address is rfn at nintendoworldreport.com. We've been getting some awesome letters lately. The first email is from Shinray01, who writes...
Hey, Shinray.
Hi, RFN. This is my first time sending an email to you guys. Pretty pumped about this. So anyways, I have two questions for you guys. First, who owns the Fatal Frame intellectual property IP? I hear that Nintendo owns it, while others say that Tecmo Koei still owns the franchise. I was wondering if you guys have any information regarding this subject. Second, if the rumors are true about a screen on Project Cafe's controller, what do you think it'll be used for? I was thinking it'll be used for maps. For example, an Ace Combat game, James, will have the radar on the controller screen rather than taking up space on the TV screen. What do you guys think?
I think Shinray's about to replace John Lindemann.
What? You kidding? I'm irreplaceable.
Mention Ace Combat and James goes crazy.
Yeah.
In a good way.
About Fatal Frame... I'm pretty sure Tecmo still owns
so
Fatal Frame.
Nintendo just published it, right?
Yeah.
Well, and they kind of funded it too, didn't they?
Yeah, but that's what publishing kind of means. But they
yeah, but I mean, like it was kind of like, hey guys, could you make a Fatal Frame for us?
Well,
yeah.
In the same way that they published Ogre Battle 3, for instance, in Japan,
and then said, oh god, we're never going to release this game anywhere else.
And and that's why it was Nintendo's call whether they wanted to publish it anywhere else. And people were asking Tecmo about it, and they're like, it's not our game, really. Like, it's not our decision. You'll have to talk
but
to
really
Nintendo.
But really passive-aggressive about it, too. Like, they were upset.
They were weird about it. This was a popular topic a couple years ago on the show.
They were really... Like, you could tell they weren't happy about the situation, but there wasn't anything they could do about it.
Yeah. I mean, based on the reports out of Japan, Fatal Frame 4 sounded like it had some serious issues.
It was a middling game.
I was excited about it at a point, and then I was like, okay, well, I hope they bring it over and fix some things in the process, and maybe Nintendo of America looked at that and said, well, we could do that, but it would cost a lot of money because we'd have to go back in there and tinker around with it.
And there was a lot of voice acting they'd have to do, and it was a bit expensive to localize to begin with.
And Fatal Frame's never been a chart topper in America, so... Yeah. It was a questionable value.
It would have been a prestige port, essentially. They would have basically been saying, "This is something in our library." Yeah. It wouldn't have been. It would not have been in and of itself to produce revenue. It would have been.
I mean, it would have been an M-rated game. I'm pretty sure.
Right.
It would have been something they could point to at a press conference. But how many people are actually going to buy that? How many people know what Fatal Frame is? I don't know. I mean,
right.
It's been a while.
It was a feather in the cap moment more than anything, and they said, "We got enough feathers with Wii Play."
It's a lot of feathers in Wii Play. So yeah, but I'm pretty sure if Tecmo wanted to make Fatal Frame 5, that would be their prerogative. They could put it on PlayStation or whatever they want. you know, so I don't think they have to ask Nintendo if they want to make another Fatal Frame. So it's really their choice. And, you know, I think 3DS seems like a pretty good target for that series.
Well, yeah, I mean, you could do some AR stuff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, shit, it's a ghost in my room. Fatal Frame AR. Tell me that wouldn't be a great eShop app.
No, it's just my cat.
For that kind of a game, I think the 3D might be really convincing, actually, because it's a horror game, and it's first person.
Right.
Or at least the photography part of it's first person. I don't know if the rest of it might not be.
I mean, there are cool things you could do, like not maybe a full game, but like an eShop app where you're just got like ghosts popping up all up in your shit.
Anyway, what do you guys think? I mean, we've kind of covered this to some extent, but we haven't talked in depth about what do you think having a screen on the controller in terms of gameplay?
I mean, I don't think
gameplay.
It's just going to be another HUD. I think I think that would be too purposeless for Nintendo to add it in there. I mean, I think it's going to be definitely something integrated with gameplay.
It's not purpose. They did that for Final Fantasy and Zelda. So.
Yeah, but I just think it's been done, though. I mean, it's been...
There will be games where this happens, though, because we see it on DS all the time. I mean,
yeah.
The developers can do whatever they want with the space. It is a blank canvas, and there will be some that just put maps on there. Mm-hmm. There will be some that find ways to make engaging gameplay using that. There will be people who find ways to do all kinds of stuff with that screen. Ultimately, it is what you make of it.
It will be, yeah. I mean, that's the good thing. It is a kind of a broad canvas. And different developers will bring different things to it. Whereas I think with motion control, what you saw is that partly because the technology wasn't up to snuff, you know, it wasn't as good as we initially thought it was, there weren't that many creative things you could do with motion control. But it amounted to a lot of just shake it because that's the motion that we can most reliably detect. Whereas like SSX, whatever,
Blur.
Had you like, drawing hearts in the air with a nunchuck and the remote, it's like, it doesn't really work that way, guys.
So, I mean, really, where creativity came in play with motion control was finding gameplay experiences that can be mapped to what the controller was capable of.
Yeah.
It was more finding a subject than it was finding a gameplay mechanic.
Mm-hmm. I think when people first heard about the Revolution controller, a lot of developers had these grand ideas, and then once they got their hands on the hardware, they realized quickly, oh, that's not going to work,
yeah.
Is it? Or it would work, but that's not actually fun once you build it. Once
right.
we test it out, we find out it doesn't really make the game more fun.
Right. Yeah. If they had launched what essentially became Motion Plus, although at the time that wasn't really feasible, mm-hmm. it might have been different.
Yeah, I mean, with the good thing about a touchscreen is that technology is much more well understood.
Well,
already.
Yeah, and they just did a whole system with it.
Yeah, well, you've got between DS and 3DS and iPhone and iPad and all the other stuff, and NGP coming out too, I think there are plenty of touchscreens out there, and developers in general have a better understanding of what to do with those. Now, of course, this thing, I mean, we don't know for sure if it is a touchscreen, but it seems very likely that it would be.
It does seem that it is, yes.
But it's also a secondary display, and that's where it gets a little more interesting because there aren't really consoles with secondary displays. I mean, it's been tried.
Well, I mean, the DS kind of has a secondary display.
Yeah, and the DS has its own secondary display. And again, you see that a lot of developers kind of take different approaches. Like, you know, Henry Hatsworth and Monster Tail use it for almost like running two separate games at the same time, and then a lot of people just kind of throw junk up there. Or in the case of Chrono Trigger, they basically use it to pull a lot of information off of the screen so you can look more at the art. And that's kind of what Shinrei is suggesting here with something like an Ace Combat. You can put things like the radar on.
Right.
And they're doing that with Ocarina of Time 3D on 3DS, where they're pulling a lot of the overlay.
Right, the HUD's off. The HUD
down
the
to the touch screen so that the 3D screen is more, it's just the game.
Right. It's basically a HUDless game at that point.
The thing is, with a console, that scenario may not work as well because
you have to look down.
Yeah, it's much more of a distance probably between looking at your TV versus looking at the controller. So I think it's gonna end up being used more like it was in, say, Four Swords, where
right.
Four Swords Adventure on GameCube, where there are parts of the game when you're looking at the TV and there are parts of the game when you're looking at your controller. So it makes a lot of sense in a multiplayer setting. You know, Pac-Man Versus, of course, is that way.
Right. Now, see, the thing is, Crystal Chronicles, it didn't really use it that way. It just basically put your own personal stats on there. And that meant that it wasn't really useful in that. You had to look down and see what your stats were, then look back up mm-hmm. at the game. And It didn't like say this portion of the game is played on your screen.
What it did is it cleaned up the interface a lot, and it made a multiplayer RPG more playable because it meant that when someone wanted to use the menu, it didn't pause the game for everyone else
because
the menu was on your GBA screen.
Right, but for displaying your stats, it wasn't super helpful because you had to look down.
Right.
Meanwhile, you're being beaten to death.
Yeah, that part I would have changed. I would have put the stats up on the TV.
Yeah.
But having the menu on the GBA screen is a good idea.
Right.
I think that worked out
and
well.
And I think you might see some stuff like that, too. I mean, I would love to play another game like Four Swords or Crystal Chronicles.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I think they'll also take a cue from Sony, actually, and allow you to download games onto, like maybe from VC, onto the controller and take that with you.
Yeah, but we don't know how much memory and hardware this
controller
is.
Exactly, we don't. But
why Virtual Console is more likely, because that stuff runs in a smaller amount of RAM.
I don't know, man. I just think that for Nintendo to go through the trouble of putting a screen on this controller, I think that would be kind of... I think it's they're doing it for more than just making it a secondary HUD. I have to think they're doing it for some other reason.
I'm looking at it more
integral than that to gameplay, either taking an entire game with you or something like that.
I'm looking at it more like there's gameplay experiences going on the bottom screen that are influencing the top screen, but your gameplay is down here.
I just think that they could do that by having the 3DS link up to the new console. Why? I mean, you know, that would actually make more sense if they're just going to use it like that.
I do wonder how they're going to justify having essentially created three devices or two devices that have screens on them that are wireless that could connect to this console, and how they're going to bridge the gap between the two and say, well...
Guys, hold the thought, because the next email is directly about that. But, you know, I mentioned on our panel at PAX East the idea of having a controller with a touch panel, if not a touch screen, that you could maybe use in such a way that you're moving a cursor around on the touch panel and the cursor appears on the TV. So maybe it's something that you could use without actually having to look down at it all the time.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
I can think of a number of gameplay concepts, because at that point you're using almost like a mouse, and there's really not a good equivalent to that. I mean, you've got the pointer of the Wii controller, which is the best thing about the Wii controller. And there have been a lot of games on the Wii that use that in really interesting ways that aren't easily replicated on other systems. And I think using a touch panel gives you a very similar kind of input that has a little bit of a different feel, and it's probably easier to calibrate than the Wii pointer is. Just in terms of, the Wii pointer is kind of uncomfortable for some people. You know, you have issues of how you hold it and how stable it is and stuff like that. So, anyway, the next letter actually directly ties into this. So this one's from Kevin in Birmingham, Alabama. And Kevin, I hope you and your family and friends are all safe, because the weather's been really bad down there. I've been getting a lot of reports from my friends and family back there. So hope you're safe. Hope everything's cool with you. I hope you've got power so you can download the show. But Kevin writes, I think people may be on the wrong track with the cafe controller concept. The rumors say that the controller will have some basic memory and processing, leading people to speculate about it becoming a portable system similar to the VMU. Instead, I think the processing is there for practical reasons. Technically, you could stream video to the controller nonstop and have all of the thinking done by the console. However, this would be bad on battery life. A typical use of the screen may be a few interactive elements, such as inventory items. Rather than streaming that, you could put a simple program on the controller and only need to send the information once. Think of it as a small flash application. So it's not exciting, but I think this explains the sort of mishmash of rumors that seem to contradict each other. The controller is not meant to be portable at all, but it still needs a mind of its own. I guess I think I disagree with Kevin on the front that streaming content to the controller would be more battery intensive than the controller having its own processor and doing some of that on board.
Right.
Because it's wireless either way.
Yeah.
So it's a matter of how much bandwidth does your wireless connection have? Is it feasible to stream video content to a controller? I think over something like Bluetooth, I think yes.
Yes, it is. I can definitively tell you it is.
So I don't know that taking that approach is actually more intensive on the battery life.
It would be more intensive to render it locally.
That's what I would think. Having a processor and a bunch of RAM on there.
I can tell you from a CE standpoint, it is more intensive to render it.
Yeah. So probably from a battery perspective, it makes more sense to stream
it. Right, because your processor is what's killing your battery, not your wireless.
Right.
I mean,
well, the wireless is a big factor, but the controller's wireless either way. Right. I mean, a WaveBird is wireless, and it lasts 10 hours.
But a processor is really like a big bed where electricity comes to die. I mean, that's what a processor is. It's what it does.
And it puts out heat. So
yeah,
that's another potential problem is if you have too much computing power.
My controller is burning me.
It's going to have vents or fans or something weird.
That's why it's called Project Cafe, because it'll give you second-degree burns.
Yep. Yeah.
So I tend to think that this thing – I mean, I agree with Kevin that I don't think Nintendo is going to set this up in such a way that you could take games with you. You know, like you go to McDonald's and keep playing your game. Because then they're competing with their own handheld, the 3DS. So I don't really see that being a possibility. And, you know, and again, if that's not possible, that points to the controller not really having very much RAM or processing capability to speak of, because it would need to be somewhat of a standalone unit in order to take this stuff with you and play it away from home. So I don't really see that being the case. I think it's going to be whatever they stream to it, it's for you to use while you're playing a console game.
Yeah, it's going to have to be something that works only with the console experience. They're not going to clone what the 3DS is doing in any way.
It's a tough situation. I mean, it's a hard sell. I mean, they're basically saying, yeah, you know how we told you can always link your handheld to your consoles? We're not doing that anymore. Here's a new thing.
Well, it's not to say that the 3DS might not work. I mean, look, if this thing is a controller with a screen on it, then the 3DS may very well be an acceptable substitute. So what they could say is, if you don't want to buy four of these expensive video screen controllers that we're selling, you can use your 3DS for one of them. They'd love to do for you to do that, because the 3DS is way more expensive than the controller.
But see, here's the thing. The 3DS doesn't have all the input buttons.
No, but it has some. So for certain things, like, say, for certain virtual console games, or who knows. But I think for certain things, it seems very feasible that the 3DS could be used as a substitute for the standard stock controller on the system.
Mm-hmm.
But not the other way around. You're not going to be able to use the controller instead of a 3DS to go play games portably.
I just feel like they painted themselves into a corner a little bit if this is really the way they're going. I mean, even if it's not necessarily true, they have to sell it still. I'd say, well, yeah, but this is different.
Well, they're going to sell it to you with the games. They're going to show some, I don't know what it'll be, but they're going to show us some games that it makes sense.
If this is their big, like, mind-bending push for this console, they really need to come with some way of saying, this is why we couldn't just do it with a 3DS.
Well, I don't think they need to have that super crazy gimmick. I mean, I think this console is positioned in a different way than the Wii was. So I don't think they're going to sell it as hard on the gimmick. I mean, I think the screen in the controller, all the signs are pointing that is the big gimmick. And maybe there's a couple other minor things that we don't know about yet.
To discuss what the other minor things might be, because in my constant rumor mongering that I have to deal with, it's possible that their big thing is related to the online strategy. And more so than like an Xbox Live situation, but that it's almost like an integrated Facebook computer. Like, not that it is Facebook, but I mean, you know what I mean? It's
does a lot of the same things that Facebook does.
Right, but it's like the Facebook of consoles. Yeah. Like, that's kind of what the rumblings – I've seen a couple sources mention, but I don't have enough detail to really write up about it yet.
Yeah, I mean, an Xbox Live attempts that, but it doesn't really go very far with it. Like,
right.
Yeah.
You can see what you can see on, if you go on Xbox Live or PlayStation Network when it's up, you can see what your friends are
so
playing.
So never.
But it's not necessarily pushing notifications to you in a useful way.
Yeah, and it's not front and center either.
It would be interesting if Nintendo could capture that, like, addictive social nature of Facebook games.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, instead of playing crappy-ass Facebook games, you're playing Nintendo games.
Right.
But it has those similar kind of hooks already built in without having to go to Facebook. So it's not like Uncharted is feeding shit to your Twitter account.
Yeah.
Two things to feed through here on that conversation. One, in the nature of Facebook games, there was a story – God, who had it? I'm trying to remember what outlet had it. But it says that the expansion of Facebook games, especially in the demographics of, like, stay-at-home mothers.
Mm-hmm.
It's got to have hurt Wii.
No, it's not Wii. It is one of the things they attribute the death of soap operas to.
Okay.
Because
but it's not good for Wii or DS.
No, it's not.
Well, the thing is, I think though, like, look at what they did with Wii, right? You know, they had Miis and everything, and they actually were doing that before anybody else was. And then, you know, that was actually copied by Xbox Live. You know, so you can kind of see where they're where they're, I think they've laid the framework for it already. In other words, they're going to do something involving Miis and maybe allowing you to post events in your games and see them on your controller and see what other people are doing in real time. So think about that. Like, you could be, look down at your controller and see, oh, hey, my buddy who was just playing this other game just did this. Like, almost have like a ticker on your controller as you're playing.
Right. It would be nice if the notifications were kept off of the TV screen, so mm-hmm, they don't mm-hmm. interrupt your experience up there, but you could look down and see, oh, this person just signed on and they're playing this game. I'm going to hit home and swap out and go.
What
and
if
play
you could
them?
Set it so the system notified you even when it's off, like on the screens, like the screen on your controller?
Oh, that'd be
on
cool.
Your
yeah, that would be cool.
And say like, hey, so and so just sent you a message or invited you to play a game.
Yeah.
Right. Instead of the glowing blue disc slot, it would be the glowing. It would be your controller just turns on and briefly says, "Hey, look," and then it turns back off. And if you weren't there to see it, no big deal. But
and
if you were, you're like, "Oh, cool!" And then you hit this button, and it turns the system on. Now you're playing
and
with it.
Launches you right into the game.
Yeah. That would be really cool. Actually.
Yeah, have like a clock on it, so you could like have a little stand right by your bed, take the controller with you.
All right, you're moving into Sony territory now, John.
Hey.
You set your alarm for the morning.
Yeah.
Oh man, I'm late to work because my Project Cafe controller died in the middle
stream.
Of the night. So you keep it on a cradle that charges it.
By the way, speaking of cradles, I did find out that you can actually kill a 3DS by keeping it closed for 3 days.
Hmm.
Just sitting there.
So that's the limit. But was it full when you started?
Yep.
So 3 days, that's the limit.
So don't do that, guys.
For sleep mode. That's interesting because DS Lite runs for like 2 weeks on sleep mode,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah.
But it's doing a lot less.
The 3DS battery... When it's about to die, like really, I try to turn it back on, like, when it's really about to die, it blinks this mean red light, like, for the love of God, put me on a charger.
John, you've got the next letter.
Adolf writes, I'm curious if having high megapixel cameras in the 3DS would help AR games from being so finicky. What about 3D photos taken with a 3DS? Will the 3D effect be more worthwhile with higher resolution cameras? What about the Mii face picture? Will that work better too? Or does the fault lie on programming and not the quality of the cameras?
It certainly wouldn't hurt.
It wouldn't hurt. I mean, you'd have to upgrade the software too, of course.
Right.
I don't know. I guess we'll find out with the NGP because it has camera and AR stuff too, and it has a higher resolution camera.
But it doesn't do as with 3D though, which does affect
3D is not a major factor on AR.
Well, it part of his question it is, like the 3D photos and stuff.
Would the 3D effect be more worthwhile? Well, yeah, the 3D effect would be more worthwhile because a higher resolution camera is going to pick up more detail in separating objects, which is what 3D is all about. It's about seeing things on separate planes, you know?
Right.
So yeah, a higher resolution screen is definitely helpful for 3D. That's mm-hmm. for sure. And the higher res camera is helpful for that too.
So where it might help is with higher resolution, you can pick out patterns better, meaning that the AR cards could be more easily identified.
That's if you program software to do that. But
see, the thing is, however, there's also more noise because there are more pixels to sort out. So it could make it more difficult to develop 100% accurate perspective.
I was honestly surprised that 3DS can pick up QR codes, which are obviously super low. They're like super pixelated, low resolution.
Right. I mean, they're just pixels.
But still.
Yeah.
You need a certain resolution to pick that up, of course.
And they're at the bare minimum.
Yeah.
QR symbols, I mean, they have targets on them, specifically designed for the camera. So, oh, there it is.
Yeah.
So it's not real surprising that it finds them quickly, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, I would love for there to be... I mean, it seems like, in the next version of the hardware, they could go with higher resolution and just put in some kind of legacy mode for when it's doing DSiWare and all the software that comes with 3DS now. It seems possible to do that. I just don't know. I don't think high-resolution cameras are at all a priority for Nintendo. I mean,
there's something cool for people to play around with, but...
And we've talked about this before, but, I mean, it kind of makes sense for DSi because that device was aimed at children for the most part. It's almost like my first camera, and it's something that they're just going to play around with. They're not trying to use it for photography. It's not like... They're not really snapping pictures of crazy things and putting them on Facebook necessarily. They're just they're playing. It's like Game Boy camera. They're just messing with it.
Now he's my second first.
Yeah,
camera.
But I think with 3DS, it's really a missed opportunity because the 3DS let me put it this way. The 3DS probably is the only 3D camera that you own.
Yep.
So it would be nice if it was a good 3D camera.
I mean, it creates the standard camera file format for a 3D camera.
Yeah.
So it would be pretty easy.
It's just horrible. It's just bad. But it is a feature that I could see being upgraded at some point. It seems reasonable that, I mean, if you're going to upgrade the 3DS, that's one of the obvious areas to do it.
We actually talked about it on the site where he went, it was the Street Pass adventure.
Mm-hmm.
And he had some 3D pictures from his 3DS on there.
That's right.
And they look cool.
Flipping back and forth.
Right. Yeah, I mean, if you put some of them on your camera like I did, it actually you can see the effect on them, some better than others. So I think one, this could be affected by the resolution. He had two examples that I thought were, one came out really, really, really well, and one came out kind of poorly, and it was because of the distance of the object. So the one he took of a plane wing, I mean, he was sitting out on the wing of the plane. Obviously not on the wing, but his seat was a wing seat. And he took a shot out the window down the wing. Well, the wing's actually pretty far from where you are, so the 3D effect wasn't very deep. But then he took a close-up picture of a bunch of Nintendo plush characters, which he was right on top of, and the 3D effect was really pronounced. And it was like really like you were looking at a thing of Nintendo plush characters. And I think if you had a higher resolution camera, it might be able to better deal with distances like that.
Yeah.
But it is what it is.
James, could you read the next letter, please?
I guess I could be persuaded. Zoe writes, "So I know the more recent releases of Metal Slug kind of sucked. However, perhaps a release for the 3DS could be pretty cool. I imagine maybe the on-foot side-scrolling parts could pop up with 3D technology, and maybe they could have some sort of 3D FPS part where you were in the tank. What do you think would make a good Metal Slug title on the 3DS or Wii, (2)?
I'm sure something they'll do is they'll have, you know, they'll do the old classic, you know, missiles firing at the screen.
They'll do
the easy one.
SNK will do the old classic of Metal Slug Collection 3DS.
Yeah.
They'll do that. John, you're a pretty big Metal Slug fan, aren't you?
Yeah, I like Metal Slug.
He likes his slugs.
Yeah, I'm not too sure. That's the thing. It's like it's one of those series where you feel like they really don't want to change it at all.
At all.
No matter what.
They're worse than Capcom.
So to think that they're going to make some fundamental change to the gameplay of the series just to, you know, accommodate 3D, I don't know, number one, if they would do it, and number two, if they did, how well they would do it. It could turn out to be completely awful.
I'm not even sure they would know what to do if they wanted to fundamentally change it. They'd be
turn out to be Bomberman Act Zero.
Yeah. No.
That's what I'm afraid of.
Mm-hmm.
Like SNK hasn't really shown a lot of room for innovation lately. Now, I mean, it would be cool to maybe do some 3D stuff with it. I mean, obviously, you could do depth of screen.
Yeah.
You could do layering. I mean, you could do in and out kind of stuff like you did in...
Was it the last one? Was it Metal Slug 7 for the DS?
Yeah, I mean, it could be kind of a fun portable game, I think. It sort of hits that portable niche pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know that I would expect them to do much.
Yeah. And the fans, most of the fans probably don't. I mean, it sounds like Zoe might want something to change, but I think most of the fans on that series are pretty diehard.
It's,
you know?
It's a very conservative game series, mm-hmm. and I love the series, but you could put Metal Slug 5 and Metal Slug 7 in front of me, and I wouldn't be able to tell you the difference.
Yeah.
I'd be like, damn.
They're fun games. I mean, if you haven't played Metal Slug, you should check it out. There's the collection for Wii, which I'm sure you could pick up for a song nowadays.
You'll get 6 Metal Slugs, and you'll think, man, do I really need 6 of these?
Wow, it's just like one big game.
You definitely don't need 6 of them. I'm sure you could pick it up
Metal
for like
Slug
5 bucks.
Anthology.
Yeah. But Metal Slug is kind of like Contra. If you've ever played Alien Hominid, it's almost exactly the same as that.
Yeah, it's not quite as brutal.
Yeah, yeah. But Metal Slug, it is really fun. It's, you know, you run around with this dude. It looks like he's in Vietnam. And he shoots dudes. And then when he gets close, he slashes them with a big knife. And he releases POWs.
Yep.
And then he jumps into a big tank and drives around and kills dudes with a tank for a while until the tank starts to flash. And that means you better get out of it before it blows up.
Mm-hmm.
And that is Metal Slug.
I stand corrected. There are 7 games on Metal Slug Anthology, including X.
Mm.
Which no one has ever beaten all 7 of those games. Ever. Like game 6 could just not be there, and nobody would ever know. Nobody would ever call SNK Playmore out on it.
James, could you read the next letter too, please?
Oh, God.
We have a bunch here. So.
Fine. The Amazing Zemo writes, "Hey guys, I just wanted to send off a letter saying how much I really enjoy RFN. I've been trying to make sure that I catch each episode, and they just seem to get better all the time. I've been starting to frequent the site more, and the articles on NWR are just as good. Can't wait for the next episode. Thanks a lot." Well, technically, now you're hearing it, so you don't have to wait anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, you've been not waiting for the last hour and 20 minutes, probably.
Thank you for the kind letter.
Yes, Simo. It's much appreciated.
And I'm glad you're reading the site, because I try so hard.
He really does.
This whole damn podcast is just one big advertisement for the website anyway.
Yep.
I work
That's
so
all
hard,
we care about.
Which every other person on the staff, not on the show, is cackling that I would even pretend that I work this hard on the site. But I do more than these guys, so that's okay.
You definitely do more than John and I do.
Yes.
That's for sure. But we're contributing editors.
I still get staff
emails. Absolutely. I will hide behind that title forever.
We appreciate the email, Zemo. And, of course, a lot of the credit goes to Greg, who puts a lot more into this podcast than any of us do.
Yep.
Even though and including this episode that he's not on.
So. I'm so sorry, Greg.
Yeah, yes. Somewhere Greg is shaking his head.
It's okay. It'll all be okay. They got an extra bank holiday this weekend. It's fine.
Yeah, that makes everything better. For the wedding. Supa writes, "Hey, NWR team, I've got an interesting question for you all today. Seeing as how everyone is speculating that the next Nintendo console will be in HD, what are your thoughts on finally seeing your favorite Nintendo franchises in a more realistic fashion? Do you think this is a good or a bad thing? I personally can't imagine these Nintendo characters rendered any better than they were presented in Brawl. Your thoughts on the matter of Nintendo characters in full HD?"
Well, I mean, HD does not necessarily mean realism. That's
thank you.
Kind of a
thank
common
misconception. Thank you,
a common misconception.
It does on Xbox, but it doesn't have to.
It doesn't have to at all.
I mean, there are games like Viva Pinata that are really beautiful on Xbox that aren't realistic at all.
Yeah.
Tales of Vesperia, that was a big one for you, James.
Yeah, I mean, that game is gorgeous, but it's not realistic looking.
Look at Valkyria Chronicles, which is cel-shaded, and it looks
right.
Amazing
yep.
on the PS3 in HD. It's not realistic at all.
No, it's HD just means there's more dots per inch.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
It makes it look sharper on larger televisions. And as televisions get larger and larger and larger, having a higher resolution is necessary because it keeps it from looking fuzzy.
Right. Mm-hmm. And you can squeeze more detail into an image if you have more pixels to work
with.
But
you don't have to.
You don't have to. But I mean, having more detail doesn't mean being realistic looking either.
Mm-hmm.
I
correct,
mean,
right.
You mentioned Tales of Vesperia. It's not realistic looking, but they squeeze a huge amount of detail into the artwork. And I mean, it doesn't make it look realistic. It makes it look more whimsical.
Mm-hmm.
Or terrifying, depending on the situation of the game. It's like, oh, that castle's on fire. Isn't that whimsical?
Yeah.
I mean, what I'm looking forward to is kind of the sort of lushness of environments, because a lot of Nintendo's characters are purposefully cartoony, both just, you know, so they have that kind of whimsical quality. And I think also because of their, you know, their origins on consoles that, you know, didn't nearly have the hardware specs that we do now, you know, they've kind of brought them along, tweaked them along the way, but I'm just kind of interested in seeing sort of like the worlds like a, you know, like an HD Metroid game would be awesome. I mean, I'd love to see
dude.
That.
Yeah.
You know, we've talked about it before, but the up-resed images of Wind Waker are amazing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Like no extra graphical processing. Just
no extra
up-resed.
Detail. They just look
up-resed.
Sharper.
And yeah. they just it looks unbelievable.
Yeah.
Like, they could release Wind Waker on their new system as a download game, except update the resolution.
Mm-hmm.
And it would instantly challenge for one of the prettiest games on that system.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm not concerned that Nintendo is going to start rendering the pimples on Kirby's ass.
Well, he doesn't have an ass, so that's fine.
He's all ass.
He's all whatever you want him to be.
Have you guys ever seen that fan art of quote unquote high res Mario and Luigi where they've got moles and like little hairs coming out of their nose and they just look ridiculous? That's never going to happen. I'm with you, John. I think the character's look won't change that much. You might get things like I remember the first time I saw Melee. I actually talked about it on the bonus episode that most of you just heard. But when I first saw Melee, I remember pausing the game and zooming in and moving the camera around and being amazed that I could see the texture on Mario's overalls.
Yeah.
Now, that doesn't make Mario seem less cartoony. I mean, he's still grossly ill-proportioned human being, you know, and he has this giant head and he's still wearing ridiculous clothing and doing insane things like shooting fireballs. It doesn't make him look hardcore. it just adds a little bit a little bit of extra detail there, you know? It captures your imagination that much more. And I think the actual character designs, again, they won't change that much. And in some cases, they, like in the case of like Kirby looks the same whether he's in 2D or 3D on any display. He's just round and pink.
It's just a ball.
That's all he looks like, no matter what. That's not going to change. But the worlds, the environments, I'm with you, John. I think that will be a big difference. And again, it's not necessarily that they become busier or that they become more realistic looking. It's not like you suddenly have cobwebs all over the place or anything like that. But there's just more you can show. Mm-hmm. I mean, think of a game like Kirby's Epic Yarn in high res, in high definition. I mean, it already looks incredible.
Well, see,
you put that high definition, it's just...
That game actually, not being in HD, kind of paid off because the fuzziness that it creates actually was used by the game almost intentionally.
Yeah. I agree, but you could totally do the same thing in HD.
Yeah, I know, but I mean, that's actually a game where they said, hey, let's make it work.
Oh, absolutely. It's a brilliantly conceived art design because it works with the hardware. But that's just a case where the low resolution of Wii, they went with an art style so that the low resolution is not a problem, whereas it is for other kinds of games. Something like, and I know a lot of people out there listening and saying, I'm not interested in this, but something like Gears of War, for instance, you really can't even do a game that looks like that on Wii because it doesn't have enough graphical process. That game would look ridiculous in 480p.
Yeah, and it would lose a lot with the
graphical power of Wii. It's not just the resolution, it's also the reduced processing and everything.
Yeah.
But that game on the Wii hardware, that game would look ridiculous. To some extent, it already looks ridiculous, but it would look just horrible. Mm-hmm. You know, that art style, and there is art in Gears of War, there really is.
Yeah.
That art style does not work on lesser hardware. And that's what's exciting. It's not that the way that things have looked in the past goes away. It just opens up wider, so now you can let in other things that you really couldn't do before. It doesn't mean you can't do the things that you did earlier, right?
Yep.
So you don't lose anything by going to better hardware. You only gain.
The only way I would be concerned, and they've already seemed to be moving away from this with Skyward Sword, is a repeat of Twilight Princess, which honestly, I mean, it's an attractive game, but they went too hard to be detailed and gritty. And in some places, it just looks silly.
Well, I think it looks silly because the hardware is not really up to it.
Yeah, and
Twilight Princess looks the best in the parts where it's cel-shaded. The actual Twilight stuff.
Right.
Those effects are really well done. Mm-hmm. But if you're in the forest, in the normal world, it doesn't look quite right because they're going for like a really detailed look, but the hardware can't actually support that, and so you get into this uncanny valley with the environment in that case.
I feel like that series in particular does really well when it has a whimsical graphical style, and that series more than any other is the one they're probably going to have the most temptation to go, let's make this gritty.
We'll see. I mean, they could have done that again with Skyward Sword, and
they went the other direction.
It's more cartoony than Twilight Princess.
They're kind of bouncing back and forth right now.
Yeah. I mean, Zelda is obviously a series where they play around with art design a lot.
Right.
Because they see that as sort of this archetype of a game where as long as the gameplay doesn't change that much, they can go crazy with everything
else. They can build whatever they want on the foundation.
Yeah. I mean, I think for that series, it would really help with the environments and make them just really, really beautiful.
You can't say being HD is a bad thing, obviously, but it's not inherently a good thing either. It's what you do with it that's important.
Yeah.
Right. But again, you don't lose opportunities by going to HD. You gain opportunities. You could lose in terms of if access to the technology tempts a developer to try to do something that they probably shouldn't.
Yes.
In a creative sense, you know, then that could be bad. But
right.
That's the developer's fault, not the hardware's fault.
Right, and I mean that does happen.
It's a choice that they made. They didn't have to go that way. So
we call that the last remnant. Hey, let's try to do things the graphics engine can't handle. Oh, look, screen tearing.
See also Perfect Dark.
Yeah.
John has the next letter.
The next letter is from Nathan in Ontario. He writes, there appear to be two general approaches to playing portables. One can either pay full attention to the game at hand, or when the experience isn't quite so engrossing, one can play a game while multitasking a movie, an album, or even a dull conversation. James. Johnny has mentioned the latter approach as an ideal means to get through.
I do have to listen to your dull conversations.
Or tedious games. my question is this. Is this even a meaningful way to play? In some ways, this appears to be symptomatic of the growing size of the industry, i.e. there are too many games to play. Not that I would know anything about that. Mingled with the adult lifestyle, i.e. time is at a premium. But if we're half paying attention to what we're doing, is there much point in the purchase? The need to split our attention seems to suggest that we're trying to complete games, but not truly enjoying them. Discuss.
It's a great, great question, great topic. I think about this sometimes myself. I mean, I examine my own habits sometimes.
As do I, Johnny.
You examine Johnny's habits too?
I mentioned a couple weeks ago that I found that playing Radiant Historia while trying to watch a movie proved to be too difficult, and I had to put the game down and finish the movie and then pick the game back up. But there are other games like, say, Pokemon that are less intensive. The battles are more mindless.
Yeah.
And it's much easier to do that while you do something else. And certainly I think that, you know, obviously you're not paying complete attention to either thing when you multitask that way. But personally, I would only do it with material that I feel like doesn't deserve my full attention.
Yeah, Pokemon, you're not missing anything.
If I turn the sound off in Pokemon and don't listen to the music, I'm not missing anything because I've heard that music for 15 years.
Yeah.
So I've heard the music, and also I'm going to play that game for 100 hours.
Right.
So I don't need to hear the music all the time. It's not really going to change.
Mm-hmm.
And the gameplay, in some cases, is the same thing. If there's a part of the game that's really interesting and challenging and requires your attention, then you will give it that attention.
Yeah.
But if there are parts of the game that are tedious and require much less of your brain power, I have no ethical problem with doing something else while I play through that.
Well, I mean, this goes back to, like, you know, like grinding through RPGs on the Super NES. I remember I used to sit there, I would find a good spot to grind my characters up, and I would just sit there and just click A, you know? Because you could just attack. I mean, attack, 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 next turn, attack, 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 and it didn't matter. Sure. Whatever you were killing, you would smoke them. You know, you could just watch TV while you're doing
early
that.
Early design, yeah, early RPG design. Mm-hmm. I mean, most of them have moved on from that. But yeah, early on, you could totally do that. And, you know, you hear about this, like, with WoW. You hear people who sit in WoW raids and play another game at the same time.
Yeah, I don't know how they do that, personally, but...
Some people can do it. I play a lot of console games while listening to podcasts because I don't like the music, or I don't like the voice acting, or... In the case of, like, say, an RPG or a puzzle game, it might be music that I've already heard to death and really don't care to hear anymore. And it's just like using a custom soundtrack or something, you know? I just put in my earphones and, okay, I'm playing this game while I listen to a podcast or I listen to my own music. I don't really feel that I'm losing anything. It's not like I've never heard the music in these games. It's that maybe I don't care to hear it any more than I already have.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the same time, I mean, to me, listening to music is sometimes should be done by itself, but in a lot of cases, people all the time listen to music while they do work or they do other things, while they drive. It's just like listening to the radio, listening to this podcast. I'm betting that very few people listening to this right now are only listening to this podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't bother me. I don't have a problem with that. I want you to go be a productive member of society while you listen to us talk about a bunch of shit.
Yeah, I mean, most people, you know, I mean, we've heard that, you know, people have this podcast on when they're cleaning the house or doing chores or just doing
having
something.
Sex.
Again.
Surfing the web, even. Even if you listen to it on your computer. I bet you're not staring at the wall listening to this. I bet you're, you know, doing other things on your computer.
Now, the flip side of this, the other part of his question is, you know, having too many games to play. And I've definitely been victimized by that, for sure, the Backrow
really?
King.
Victimized.
Well, that's the thing, though. I mean, in a way, like I find myself now, like, I have to, you know, I mean, I reached a point where I was like, wait a minute, there are just way too many games out there that literally are worth my time playing. But,
yeah. You
know, I've kind of gone back, I've thought back to, like, the days where, you know, of like, the NES, when it really was the same kind of thing, where there were a ton of games coming out for that console. But because I wasn't tied into, you know, I wasn't sitting there checking news on my phone every half an hour. You know, I didn't have all of these news outlets saying, here's a new great game, here's a new great game, here's a new great game.
Right.
You know, I actually almost enjoyed the video game hobby more back then because I didn't know what I was missing. And I was okay with that.
Ignorance is bliss.
Like, it's okay not to play every single game out there. I had to kind of come.
Cool? Are you okay not playing Portal 2?
Yeah, because you know, because that's the thing. It's like I want to make sure that I get to it. I mean, when I'm playing through Chrono Trigger, and then I have Pokemon queued up, and I have Historia behind that, and also like there's games, there's other console games that I have. Yeah, at that point, realistically, I'm okay not playing Portal 2.
There's definitely a glut of high quality video games, and it's hard to play all the ones I want to play, much less all the games that are worth playing. Mm-hmm. And those two things have to become farther and farther apart for me to retain my sanity. I have to become choosier. And it's one reason that I didn't go out and buy something like Pokemon, even though maybe it is the best Pokemon ever, but it's not that much different than the other Pokemons. And I've played Pokemon, and I would enjoy it if I picked it up.
Yeah.
But think of all the other games that I wouldn't play because I was playing fucking Pokemon again. Mm-hmm. I have to be serious with myself and say, you know, I'd rather try something new like Fallout New Vegas that I might not enjoy as much as Pokemon because at least it's new.
Yeah.
And I can't justify – it's one reason that I rarely go back and replay games. I don't reread books even if I love them because there's too many books that I want to read that I haven't read yet.
Yeah.
I think it's worth thinking about your habits. Why do you do the things that you do? If you want to go out and buy that game, why? Just take 30 seconds and think, is it because everybody says it's good, or is it because I really want to play it for myself?
Yeah.
Or is it because it's a Nintendo game and I want to support the company? That's never a good reason.
Yeah. You know, like I used to easily get caught up in the hype, like, you know, like some of my friends at work would be like, oh man, I'm going out to get the new Madden. Oh, you know what? That sounds like a great idea. I go out and buy Madden, play it for like 3 hours, never touch it again. Because something else comes out.
James, you haven't said much, and this doesn't seem to affect you as much. I never get the sense that you're overwhelmed by having too many games. I mean,
no,
you seem to be very picky, very particular about the ones you choose, and then you just devour them.
Yeah, I mean, it becomes an issue when a game like Phantom Brave gets caught in the works, because it's very laborious to get through it. I mean, it is a real effort to process that game. And then to sort of move on to the next one. So sometimes there is kind of a build-up. I mean, I still have a copy of No More Heroes.
It's hard for you to quit games.
Right.
That's what we've established that very well. Like, you can be playing a game, and even if you don't enjoy it that much, it's hard for you to move on from it because you need to feel some kind of closure.
Right. I mean, if I hate the game, I'll stop playing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I didn't beat Rayman 3D. I didn't need to because I've beaten it before. Mm-hmm. But, I don't quit games, but I don't go and acquire a bunch of games either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're not as crazy as John and I are about...
I mean, I own a lot of damn DS games. Like, I'm looking at it right now. I have a whole shelf full.
Yeah, but you seem to buy a game, beat it, buy the next game, beat it, rather than buy, and then maybe you'll get to the
mall. A procedure. Yeah. I mean, I when there's no games in the chute, I go and acquire a game.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'll usually try to have a handheld game and a console game going, kind of on separate tracks. Mm-hmm.
But not playing them at the same time.
I have before. I've played a console game and a handheld game at the same time, which may seem like I'm burning the candle at both ends to the detriment of both games. But a lot of times what'll happen is games have downtime in them.
Yeah.
RPGs especially, there's downtime.
Yeah.
Well, I was trying to play Radiant Historia during the load times of Fallout New Vegas, which are bad and frequent.
Oh, you could beat the whole game.
And it would have worked, except the problem is Radiant Historia is not that fast-paced either.
No.
So, and a lot of what you do in Radiant Historia is you spend 60 seconds planning out your moves, and then it takes another 30 to 45 seconds just to watch them happen. So if those don't align properly, then it didn't work. But I tried it. I thought about it.
Yeah, I mean, since I move kind of on a track as I go through games, for me it's not a big deal. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are games built up at the store that I want to play, but they're not here. They're somewhere else, so they're not in my face bothering me.
Well, I think the short answer to Nathan's question is that I don't feel that I owe the games or the makers of the games anything. So I don't feel bad about doing it a certain way. I'm going to play the game the way that I want to. And if I didn't feel that it was a satisfying way to do it, then I would stop. Look, I played Picross 3D for probably 150 hours, mostly while doing other things. And if that wasn't a good enough experience for me, then I wouldn't have spent that much time doing it. So I like playing it that way. And, you know, if you don't, then don't do it, right? It's that simple.
Well, yeah, I mean,
it's that simple. I don't owe it to Nintendo to give my full attention to Picross 3D. Fuck them. I paid for it, so
yeah. You
play
I'm
it, play
it
you the
want.
Way I want to play it. You know,
you could bring it home and keep it in the plastic wrap and put it on a shelf. Yeah,
yeah, that's
yeah,
right.
Never play it ever. How yeah. you like
you
that?
You might be doing yourself an injustice, but you're not doing the company an injustice or
How
the
like
game
that,
itself.
Assassin's Creed. Yeah,
it's a work of art. You can't hurt its feelings.
Yeah.
All right, well, that's going to do it for emails this week. Thank you, everybody who wrote in. We actually have even more that we didn't have time to get to, and we'll try to catch up on next week's episode because those are good, too. So thanks, everybody, for writing. The email address is rfn@nintendoworldreport.com, and we would love to hear from you. So right now, before you forget, of course, you can rate and review us on iTunes. We would very much appreciate that. It's a very good way. If you have recently discovered the show and you like it and you'd like to help other people find out about it, leaving a review and giving us a rating on iTunes is a very good way to do that because it factors into the search results that people get when they search Nintendo on iTunes. That helps us pop up near the top, and it helps people discover the show. So we would really appreciate that. It only takes a minute to do. You can, of course, like us on Facebook. We post little updates on there throughout the week, and you can connect with other people. We have photos of the podcast crew, photos from PAX at the panels, some really cool artwork that one of our fans sent in. So there's a lot of good stuff up there. You should check that out. And a couple of us are on, actually all three of us are on Twitter. Mm-hmm. John posted some stuff this week for the first time in a while.
Both Johns.
The real one and the fake one.
Yep.
Yes.
Which one's which? Who knows?
I'm at Johnny Metz. James is at John Lindemann. and John is at NWR
underscore Lindy.
Okay. NWR underscore Lindy. And of course the website is NWR underscore Nintendo. So if you, that's the one you should definitely get on because, that has, all the latest news updates from the website.
And we write our Twitter posts now. So you get my smooth silence.
Yeah. They're not like robotic sounding. We actually write the little.
Now they're like, who's pimping on your 3DS? You're pimping on your 3DS.
Link.
By the way, next news article I write, that's going in there because no one ever checks that during edits.
If you're on Twitter, link up to us and to the website. It's worth your time. And finally, we are happy to announce the new retroactive poll. This will be retroactive number 18, I believe. And the theme of this edition, we're returning to you, the listeners. We're asking for your guidance to help us choose which game to play and for you to play as well. And we're going with four games this time. Couldn't think of a good one to fit in the fifth slot. But the theme is games that have recently been remade. So the nice thing about this is that there's a built-in discussion of comparing the original to the remake and the differences there. And also, as a side benefit, all four of these games are available on multiple platforms, in some cases more than two even. So hopefully they are highly accessible no matter what systems you own or how long you've been gaming, etc. So we actually have two from Rare and two from Ubisoft. So the four candidates to vote on are Perfect Dark. I believe this is its last chance, actually. I think this is the third poll that it's been in. So if it loses this one, it won't come back. Banjo-Tooie, Prince of Persia, Sands of Time. Excellent game. It was recently re-released on PlayStation Network. So if that wins, we might have to wait a while. But it's also easily available on GameCube, of course, which you could play on your Wii. And finally, Beyond Good and Evil, which was, of course, the HD version of that just came out. So a lot of these are available on Xbox, some of them on PlayStation 3 as well, and then the original platforms as well. So if you still have the N64 or the GameCube versions, all of those are still out there and fairly easy to acquire. I think you can get an original, it might be like a PS2 copy of Beyond Good and Evil if you buy a packet of cheese in certain countries. So these games are not, no matter how you choose to play them, these games are not that hard to get a hold of. Okay, so hopefully a lot of people will be able to play. And hopefully we'll get a mixture of some people playing the original versions and some people playing the new versions so we compare and contrast a little bit. So I'm looking forward to this a lot. These are more modern games than some of them that we've played recently for Retroactive. And they're all fairly brisk experiences. They're not RPGs. They're not 40-hour over battle games either.
Hog Battle's way longer than 40 hours.
That's not what you said when we talked about it on the show.
Well, that's not what it took me to beat it, no. There's a difference.
Anyway, hopefully these will be a little bit easier for people to step into and a little bit easier for us to digest in the course of a retroactive. So anyway, the poll is up at the website. Go to NintendoWorldReport.com. You will see a link to it there. Also, the article for this podcast, for this episode, well, there'll be a link in there. So it should be easy to find. It'll be in the forums. If you're not already registered, sign up really quick. It's super easy. And then you can vote in the poll and help us decide what to play next. So that's going to do it for this episode. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Greg, have you back next week. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Later.
John, I have an idea for you. Tomorrow, I want you to go out and buy 7 games. Put them on the shelf, because I'm losing the ability to make this joke. And that's much more important than your economic well-being.
Never again.
John, you should feel a responsibility.
Never again. John, we talked you into buying Pokemon Black and White.
These jokes for
But
James.
See, that's the whole thing, though. I will play through Pokemon Black and White.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, the thing is,
Chrono Trigger is only the wrong one.
Chrono Trigger is only the tip of the iceberg of the new Johnny
of
L.
The new John Lindman.
Yeah. It's a new era.
Is that the one that walks around in the middle of the woods drinking Natty Lights, screaming at cameras?
That's the old Johnny L. You're getting them confused. You're getting them confused.
You know, playing this has also reminded me about the Mega Man X command mission.
Oh!
Is that... I know, I remember it got kind of middling reviews when it first came out. I was excited, very excited for it.
It's worse than the reviews say.
Really? So I should just...
Only if you can get it, like, really dirt cheap to just enjoy that it's not a very good game.
It's too bad. I mean, as I've said, I'm more a fan of X than I am of Mega Man. And I love Japanese RPGs,
It stars Axel, too, which is really...
That's weird.
Awful. I mean,
Mega Man and his shitty friends.
X and Axel are in it, and Axel is, like, the shittiest Mega Man character ever.
I think you can play as him in Mega Man X8.
You can, and he's awful. And I was like, can I just drop you off a cliff 100 times? I hate you so much. We also have impressions and an interview for Burger Time World Tour. Aaron played the upcoming WiiWare reboot of the classic franchise, and you can read his report on an interview with the developer and publisher. And we note here, with Choaniki content.
I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, it's published by Monkey Paw Games, who are the people who brought Choaniki to PlayStation Network, and they might have been responsible for the Virtual Console version.
Responsible is the right word.
Yeah, I'm not sure, but they're definitely responsible for the train wreck PlayStation version that you can download. I paid like $7 for that shit on my PS3, and it's... wow.
I want to point out that
Yoshi!
Speaking of
Yoshi!
Jared has impressions of Captain America Super Soldier.
Are you referring to Jared or Captain America?
Captain America, obviously.
Either way, that shit's wrong, dude.
Jared got to...
He was...
Hi!
...as part of the Super Soldier project. He can't be a...
Yoshi!
Are we talking about Captain America or Jared?
They pumped him full of steroids. He got massive muscles and tiny...
He does wear very, very tight spandex.
Oh my god.
Government-issued spandex. Jared!
Greg, where are you? Save us. Greg, please. We need your derisive sigh to get us back on order.
All you have to do is imply a beloved superhero is a
Yoshi!
It's all over.
Finally, we've got Captain America Super Soldier impressions. Jared got to play both the Wii and the DS versions of this movie-based game. Find out whether High Voltage Software can repeat their conduit success with the good Captain.
Nice save.